Recent allegations about the behavior of former White House doctor Ronnie Jackson may have also revealed a culture overly reliant on sleeping pills and alertness drugs. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, in for Ben Kiefer as he recovers from knee surgery. This hour, sleep expert neurologist Dr. Eric Dykin of the University of Iowa Sleep Disorders Center will give us some insight into the use and abuse of sleep aids. We'll also talk about how sleep aids might change the quality of your sleep and why dreams are so important. Dr. Dykin will also answer your questions. 866-780-9100. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, in for Ben Kiefer today as he recovers from knee surgery. And this hour, our sleep expert, neurologist Dr. Eric Dykin of the University of Iowa Sleep Disorders Center, is with me. And Dr. Dykin, last week we heard a lot of allegations about former White House doctor Ronnie Jackson. This is not politics day, so we're not going to get into the allegations. But one of the interesting things that came to light was this rampant use of prescription sleep aids and alertness drugs without prescription. There was an article in Politico following these allegations that said basically that's standard practice in D.C. So that's where I want to start today, is with sleep aids. I mean, these are drugs that are extremely common, both prescription and apparently not prescription as well.
Yeah. I mean, so these are typical medicines that have been used. The Provigil is actually FDA approved. And if you look at this article, yeah, it's got a lot of political smear and slant. But Provigil, if you really push it, I mean, they're all prescription drugs. It is approved by the FDA and then recognized by the American Academy of Sleep Medicine for the use of narcolepsy, a sleepiness disorder, for a shift work disorder. And somebody might push what they were implying: when you're jet lagging, when the president and his staff and other important political people are flying from one country to another and going over many time zones as a treatment for jet lag, but it's specifically for shift work disorder, which is, if you will, jet lag at home.
Right.
A lot of us work
jet lag on a regular basis.
Yeah, and I do it. Then you try to make up on the weekend and boom, they're in trouble. And the third use of Provigil is for people with persistent sleepiness despite successful treatment of obstructive sleep apnea, where we think we may have damaged some of the normal centers for arousal from chronic low oxygen to the brain. Now, the Ambien, that drug is a medicine that was made to be holistic and to parallel Mother Nature's sleep center in the brain. And there's an area in the hypothalamus, deep in the brain, that is GABAergic, if you will. That's the neurotransmitter. This medicine, the Ambiens, were drugs that were made to mimic that neurotransmitter. So in some people's mind, for elderly people, although you'd be careful when you use any drug, it might be a better medicine as you get older and might have an insomnia problem. But these are recognized drugs. But then the issue got sort of cloudy. You always prescribe to a patient that you know, and medicine's based on history and physical examination. But when you're on the front lines, sometimes the rules change, and I've never been on the front lines. So if I'm on Air Force One and they're quoting that, what do you do when the president says, I need to do this, and I need to do it now, and I don't have time to follow good sleep hygiene practices, which is what we recommend first. The most important thing to be able to handle being wide awake during the day and sleeping well at night is good sleep hygiene as defined by cognitive behavioral therapeutic intervention techniques. And then it's a whole other story.
Well, I think let's talk about our culture in the United States, though, because a lot of us get terrible sleep. We want to sleep better because we can feel how negative sleep, how bad sleep impacts us. But also, culturally, we don't want to go through good sleep hygiene and cognitive behavioral therapy to be able to get it done. We want instant gratification.
Well, God bless America. And I do believe that. But we're a relatively privileged group, and they don't want to hear the doctor talk about 7 to 9 hours of sleep at night. Just like grandma told you, look, I'm working shift work. I never know when I'm going to be called. I need something to keep me awake now. I need something to get me to sleep right now. And we're a very demanding group. But for longevity, sleeping 7 to 9 hours per night on a routine basis. And now that I'm getting close to being grandpa, grandpa, I want to see the great-grandkids. And you will live less years. You will have more health-related problems if you do not routinely follow good sleep hygiene practices. And you will die younger when you take drugs. I had horrific insomnia. But what did the surgeon do? He replaced my hips. I had such tremendous end-stage hip disease. And two very good people who are dead because they took the same medicines I took, but too much, prior to considering surgical replacement of their hips. That's Prince and Tom Petty. Tom Petty had a hip fracture. Those were the medicines I was on. When you have that kind of pain, and in fact, when they took my hips out, that's the old Civil War. They cut my leg off. I was on those medicines for a long period of time because that pain is severe. That was their sleep medication, and it killed them dead. Surgical replacement in the right case is the best therapy.
I'm hearing you say you need to figure out what's causing the bad sleep before using medicine to try to treat that.
Yeah, absolutely, because poor sleep, insomnia, there are 5,436,942 different causes. We don't have time to list them all, but I mean, think of something that messes up your sleep. Oftentimes, heal thyself. The patient can figure it out. But sometimes they go, I don't have time to figure it out. Just put me to sleep. Just give me a wake. And I got to tell you, we are the amphetamine capital of the world in the Midwest. And out in Indiana, where my buddy lives, out in the country area, they are the heroin area. Give me something to knock me out. And you can get opioids to knock you out on the street. You can get amphetamines to keep you up on the street. And we know it's an epidemic. And people we love are dying from these medications. Not so much the Ambien, Provigil, which were medicines made for sleep-related problems. Nevertheless, if I was flying international, jet-lagging, and if I had to get to Europe, which I'm going to get to do pretty soon with my family, we often recommend the potential use of bright light therapy, trying to fool the system. So when you get to where you want to be, take a walk in the bright sunlight. It decreases the normal melatonin that makes you sleepy during the day, or the use of melatonin, which is a normal hormone that your body produces for sleepiness. They may be better medications in regard to the specific problem that we're addressing, that this political issue sort of came up. There might be some better medicines.
Well, I want to talk about the sleep aids that do get prescribed. I mean, you said they're designed for sleep because not all things that make you sleepy enhance your sleep. Like how do sleep aids change what you're experiencing when you are asleep?
Well, some of these are made like the normal neurotransmitter for sleep or wakefulness. Others, like alcohol.
Which is very common. A lot of people use alcohol to help them go to sleep at night.
It's so easy to get to. It's so accessible. And who doesn't enjoy a few beers while watching a Hawkeye football or basketball game? And there's a social component to it. But we know it's a very dangerous potential element and a lot of problems with alcohol in this country. Alcohol, with people often use, initially it has a sedating effect, can get you to sleep. If you have underlying sleep apnea, it can make your sleep apnea worse. And if that gets bad and you don't arouse, you may never wake up. There are many people, John Candy, Andre the Giant, Jerry Garcia, Reggie White, Carrie Fisher. They were on other things, other medicines, or had other health-related issues. But they may have died from untreated apnea that was made worse by sedating medication. Then what happens with alcohol, 3 to 4 hours after you take it, the sedating effect often has what we have call a sympathetic or a get-up-and-go activation effect on your central nervous system. So it screws up your sleep, and it can permanently change, after abuse of alcohol, the normal brainwave patterns of sleep, and you can be left with permanent insomnia that may last for years and years, and as such, make alcohol withdrawal much, much more difficult.
So alcohol before sleep is not a good idea.
Oh, no. Yeah. We always say if you are going to drink after a Hawkeye game, et cetera, and you don't know about apnea, for example, 1 hour for every 12 ounces of beer, 1 ounce shot of whiskey, or 4 ounce glass of wine. Wait about an hour for every drink before you try to go to sleep. Let your body metabolize it so you get away from those negative effects.
We're talking about sleep this hour with me, neurologist Dr. Eric Dykin of the University of Iowa Sleep Disorders Center, and he's here to answer your questions as well. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can send email to rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. And all right, let's shift this conversation a little bit, because there is some recent research that gives us some insight about what can help us decompress after work, and decompressing after work can help us fall asleep. There was a study that just was published in the Journal of Occupational Health Psychology that tells us that having fun after work can help us sleep better. Although they're not talking about going out and getting drunk, obviously. But let's talk about this decompression period between work and sleep, or whatever, school and sleep, whatever it is that you're doing in your life that may be bringing your stress into your life. What's so important about this period?
Well, yeah, stress and pressure. Why would stress, if you watch a horrible fire, and you get a little post-traumatic, why does that keep you from sleeping? If we watch a horrific incident, we all know you're going to have trouble sleeping the night after. Well, your get-up-and-go system, your autonomics. You know, remember in junior high, they say, we put you in a room with a tiger, your eyes dilate, your heart rate goes up, your blood pressure goes up, you start to sweat, and you're ready to run. When your autonomic nervous system is elevated, your catecholamines, it's really, really hard to sleep. You've had a bad day. People have berated you. You've been yelling and screaming. I mean, some of our jobs are enjoyable in that way. I mean, professional football players, athletes, CEOs, physicians, nurses, just working at Daydream Comic Books, an angry customer who doesn't have the newest edition of Batman. I mean, we all have normal stresses that are part of life, and you need to calm down. You need to go watch Blu-ray TV or something like that. And there are a lot of different things you can do, but they have to be palatable to you. And they do imply sometimes something physically active. What I'm doing is getting ready for this vacation, and I'm on a diet program, and I'm competing with my daughter. So I go home and do the elliptical for an hour, and I look forward to it because then I check my weight, and then I look at my calories, and it's fun. If I wasn't going on vacation, going home and exercising probably wouldn't be that much fun. Before that, though, we would go home and my wife would pick out, it was Parks and Recreation. We don't get cable. We would watch one Parks and Recreation. That's a pretty good show. So it was a family thing. We looked forward to it. We would eat in front of the TV. And it was a way to catharsis, to relax. And we enjoyed going home. And by the time the show was over, my exercise is done and I'm all showered up, I feel good. And I sleep better, less stress.
Well, a lot of us carry our work around with us in our pocket these days. So is that something that's getting in our way if we're checking our work email pretty regularly throughout the evening hours if we happen to work regular shift?
Yeah, you know, and the kids especially, we see it, teenagers are especially because they're part of the new wave. They're really adept at using the electronics, which are wonderful things. But we often have rules that we make for the kids. Why not ourselves? So, like, no texting an hour before stated bedtime. Hour before stated bedtime, you make a routine. You brush your teeth, you put on your pajamas, you settle down, you pull that real boring comic book. That's what I do. Have it over there by the side of the bed. And oh, my bedroom, the environment is sleeping conditioning plus. There's only the bedroom, as Bill DeMint, and he got a little trouble for that, but there's a story behind it. But the world's greatest sleep disorder expert at Stanford Sleep Labs, been in movies, Johnny Carson, so once said, the bedroom is for sleep and sex. So I'm getting older, for sleep is about the only thing that we use it for, but not the bills, as you said. You don't sit down and look at your taxes, and I don't start counting sheep. That just drives me crazy. And everybody's an individual with that. A cool environment, 69 to 71 degrees, what works for you. A dark environment that is relaxing, inviting, so that, like Pavlov's dog, a positive conditioning that is welcoming. You want to come home to it.
Let's get to the phones. You're welcome to join the conversation with your questions about your sleep. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Our email address is rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. And Derek is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Derek.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Thanks for taking my... Oh, I was a pretty horrible snorer, and I went to the sleep center here in Iowa City, and I definitely have sleep apnea. But I just couldn't handle the machine at all. Like, just wouldn't work for me. I just felt like I was being suffocated.
The CPAP machine?
Couldn't get used to it.
Yeah.
And then I tried one of those things like a Zipa, or I'm not sure what the name of the one I use is, that pulls your jaw forward a little bit. And it's, my partner says that I don't snore anymore, and I do believe that I'm sleeping through the night. But I'm just wondering, is the snoring and the sleep apnea, can you be a snorer without sleep apnea, or I still have sleep apnea without snoring? Does that make sense?
Yeah, you can have snoring without sleep apnea. And you can have sleep apnea with snoring. In fact, without snoring, what my techs don't like, they don't mind snoring so much, but when it stops. Because when you have an apnea,
right,
you're not snoring anymore. But as you've implied, there are a lot of different therapies. A lot of people are claustrophobic, just can't wear the mask for a variety of reasons. If you had a small stroke or a weakness in one extremity, a cerebral palsy, or maybe only one arm, it may be difficult to put on a CPAP mask. So I wear a CPAP, and I'm pretty good at putting on the mask. So it has its own components. But oral devices are recognized good therapies for people with mild to moderate obstructive sleep apnea. There are also hypoglossal nerve stimulators, and we're starting to do that. It's sort of the new branch of sleep medicine, other therapies. You really want sleep apnea treated because it's associated with low oxygen. And even my 90-year-old mom knows low oxygen's a bad thing, and you want to keep breathing. So this hypoglossal nerve stimulation in sleep apnea will increase the tone of your tongue so it doesn't flop and close off the back of your throat, a simple way of looking at it. But weight loss, positional therapies, we have more and more therapeutic options, because just slapping a mask on most of us, which is the therapy of choice for most people, but it doesn't work for everybody. And the oral device is a wonderful alternative.
Okay, I just want to make sure it is approved or whatnot.
It is.
It seems to work.
A good therapy,
okay.
And good for you. And if it gets out of hand, sometimes your apnea can get worse. I'm getting older. My apnea is getting a little bit worse. Just give your doctor a call, your nurse practitioner, and they can adjust accordingly.
And you're still using a CPAP?
Oh, yeah. You know, I lost vision from my apnea. So I didn't know I had glaucoma. So when you bear down against a closed throat with apnea, you increase the pressure in your chest, your abdomen. Reflux is a big thing with apnea, but also intraocular. And I woke up with blurriness, and I blew out most of the vision in my right eye. And God, she's out in Afghanistan taking care of little kids. I am not getting the vision back. And I don't want that to happen again. So many of us are prone with low oxygen to different things: heart disease, stroke, kidney, liver, visual problems. And Sant Heray, actually, here at the University of Iowa, is one of the world experts on visual loss and sleep apnea. I'm one of the unlucky ones. But I'm not going to let that happen again. So I wear my CPAP. If I didn't have that, I'd have the oral device or one of the other therapies that we rattled off.
Let's go to the phones again. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Craig is on the line in Ames. Hi, Craig.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you, Charity, and thank you, Doctor.
Yeah.
I'll keep it short. My question concerns the use of tart cherry juice. I believe it's imported from Turkey. Let's say a 1-to-1 ratio, 1 ounce to 1 ounce, how much you might recommend, if at all. And then number two, the melatonin, and how much to aid in getting to sleep at night. And well, I can listen off the air or hang on.
Oh, do whatever you want. Yeah, I don't know anything about tart cherry juice, so that's beyond me. But melatonin, we're learning more and more about melatonin. So when it becomes dark, your body normally, because of the absence of the effect of sun and bright light, produces melatonin at night to make you sleepy, sort of a cool little thing. In brain injury or as we get older, melatonin appears to be a pretty good supplement for a lot of different sleep-related problems that include insomnia, poor sleep. But it can have side effects, as can anything. It may not be effective for certain sleep-related problems. But for me, in the United States, melatonin is actually a food additive. It's not really a restricted substance as it is in Canada. So, and the bioavailability, how much is in every pill? A buddy of mine looked at this once and said there was zero physiologic melatonin in some of the tablets compared to other brands that had 10 times the physiological doses.
So how do you know that?
Well, you try it, and if it works for you, it does pretty good. And that's really what you do, because it's like taking, you know, any other vitamin in the United States, but not in Canada. And there are other brands of melatonin-like substances that can cost up to $80,000 for circadian rhythm problems, up to $80, like the Remeltion, I think that's something like that per month, or just the over-the-counter, which is cheap as dirt. But what we've seen is it not only helps you get to sleep at night, so at low doses, older people like me, so I think that's what my problem, my circadian, I tend to go to sleep earlier, but it often helps set my bedtime at low doses, but at higher doses, so that's like 1 milligram or less, but at higher doses, like 10 milligram, it often has a sleepiness-producing or a soporific effect. So I often take the higher dose. It helps me go to sleep on the occasion that I rarely need it. And the side effects are relatively few.
Now, I've heard that the effects can kind of wear off over time.
Oh, yeah, because I only want to use it on one night. So, yeah, in fact, you really shouldn't need it night after night after night after night after night. In the old days, what we would say, if you're really using a medicine for 1 to 3 weeks, see your healthcare professional, your PA, your ARNP, your DO, your MD. There's a lot of experts. There are licensed sleep technicians, people who you want to sit down and talk to, because medicines in general are not good for sleep on the long run.
All right. With something that works, though, I can imagine that, okay, I start taking melatonin. It's helping me. It's probably hard to say, all right, now I've done that for a few days, I'm not going to take it anymore. I mean, how do you know when you shouldn't take it?
Well, actually, I only take it like once, and then I don't take it anymore. And then I take it once, and I keep it in my back pocket. And it's an interesting phenomenon. When you give a patient that opportunity to pull them out of the fire once, they use it less often.
All right. Well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. It's River to River on Iowa Public Radio. I knew I was going to say Talk of Iowa at some point. I'm filling in for Ben Kiefer as he recovers from knee surgery. And with me this hour, our sleep expert, neurologist Dr. Eric Dykin of the University of Iowa Sleep Disorders Center. You can join the conversation, 866-780-9100.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe in for Ben Kiefer today. And this hour, our sleep expert, neurologist Dr. Eric Daikin of the University of Iowa Sleep Disorders Center is with me to answer your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can send email to rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. And let's get back to the phones. We've got a lot of people lined up here. Doug in Des Moines. Hi, Doug.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, what's your question?
Well, so I'm a moderate snorer, and I've actually got a sleep study coming up in about a week to help me rule out any sleep apnea. My sleep doc has said probably not, but they want to do the study anyway just to rule it out. But let's just hypothesize and say I don't have sleep apnea. Dr. Daikin, do you have any recommendations to help my poor wife who is not getting enough sleep because of my snoring?
Well, you know,
are there any devices I might be able to use or anything like that?
Yeah, this is, and it's an interesting, it's a major issue. My in-laws, again, they're 96 years old, but I know why they're sleeping in separate rooms. They have loud snoring and they have obstructive apnea, but they're a little bit of a different issue. But you can have snoring that's disrupted to the spouse, the bed partner. And in our culture, we usually like to stay in the same bed with our bed partner. The snoring is a serious problem, but third-party payers, insurance companies, Medicaid, Medicare considers it a cosmetic problem. Well, it really isn't. Loud snoring could lead to high-frequency hearing loss. You think your wife doesn't like it. It's right in between your ears. So, but it's still a cosmetic problem. Now, the treatment to really get rid of snoring is taking out the redundant tissue that is causing the problem. And there's a surgical procedure called a uvulopalatopharyngoplasty or laser-assisted uvulopalatoplasty, a Latin term for all the gunk in the back of your throat. And it hurts like snot. And if you've ever had tonsils out, and I did, it really hurts. And if you're a singer, and it's amazing how many of us with apnea have been singers, those are your resonators. You could destroy a career. No one's really looked at that, but it's amazing how many of my apneics say, you can hear the resonators in the back of the throat, and it's beauteous while they're awake, but when they go to sleep. So is surgery really what you want to do? Out of pocket, thousands of dollars and all the pain, and then it destroys your singing career. Well, you know, that's hypothesis. Maybe you'll sound like a little more nasally and you can sell yourself as a nasal singer. I don't know. The oral devices are very good at what they do for apnea. They pull your jaw forward and they open up the space in your throat, what we call the anterior airway space. Now, they are approved for the use of obstructive sleep apnea, but I'm not so sure what the third-party payers are doing, insurance companies, in regard to straight snoring. But there are over-the-counter devices which do things that are similar, that will pull your jaw forward and maybe be very helpful with snoring in itself.
Like the mouth guard we were talking about earlier?
Yeah. So people are finding what works for them. And some people are positional. So when we go on vacation, my kids insist that I wear my CPAP. I'm primarily positionally related apnea. So when I lay on my back, flat on my back, gravity pulls all the tissue back. I got resonators, and I don't want to cut them out. But if I wasn't wearing CPAP, they would make me wear a positional device. And there's a lot of those that will allow me to flop back and forth, but it won't allow me to sleep flat on my back for any prolonged period of time. It's like a balloon between your shoulder blades. So positional devices sometimes are also very helpful. But I got to tell you, oftentimes when you got snoring and they're doing a study, sleep apnea is what you find you have. And I got to tell you, for singers, the heated humidity is real good for the glottis, your vocal cords, and I think it helps singers. So I try to sing a little bit, and I really like having the heated humidity. It makes my throat feel better. So, you know, as we've implied, a variety of different therapeutic options because your wife needs to be in the same room as you.
Does that help you out, Doug?
Yes, it does. Thank you guys so much.
All right. Yep. Thanks
Good
a
luck.
Lot for your call. Let's go to Danella next in Fairfield. Hi.
Hi.
What's your question?
I don't really have a question. I've been using a CPAP now for many years, and I just wanted to make a comment that it took me probably close to 4 or 5 years to get used to it.
Mm.
And then one day I tried it, and I'm using the mask that just goes over the nose.
Yeah.
And because I found the other mask, I felt kind of claustrophobic from it.
Yeah, yeah.
But now I don't go anywhere without it. It made a huge difference. It gave me so much more energy. And for years, I would, like you were talking, I would sleep on the couch, which was like a real bed, and my husband would sleep in the bedroom, but unfortunately he passed away a year and a half ago. So anyway, but my sleep quality now is just great.
You know, and it's true. We have, I'm proud of our team. Again, I'm biased with our team, but we have licensed sleep technicians, ARNPs, physicians, DOs, MDs, who understand the mask, and we understand also to be able to adapt to this thing. It's easier said than done. And our vets who have post-traumatic stress problems, who have had to wear gas masks, there's a real phenomenon of that. You wear a gas mask, and they make you go through these trainings they fight. They're in military. It's a tough world out there. It is claustrophobic producing. And an awful lot of our veterans have real problem wearing the CPAP because of the claustrophobia. So we do have psychologists in our insomnia clinic that can help desensitize. But if you've been through hell and back, which a lot of our veterans have, you can empathize how difficult this is to really adapt to a CPAP mask on occasion. On the other hand, people like me, I got to tell you, my apnea, my reflux was so bad, I adapted to it really well, despite the fact I had a poor-fitting mask and it was causing abrasions on my nose. It just felt so much better. So every patient's an individual, and it's not just I start CPAP and I'm therapized. Sometimes you really need to follow and support the patient throughout the full course of the therapy.
Well, Danella, thank you so much for your call, and I'm sorry for your loss. I think, you know, in listening to Danella talk about taking 5 years to get used to her CPAP, that could be a little discouraging to some people who are thinking about trying this therapy. But it can be, I mean, obviously it can be a life-saving therapy, but it can be quite an adjustment.
And you know what she alludes to, too. You build a better mousetrap kind of a thing. Over the years, what this mask machine used to be, loud as a jackhammer, you taped, actually duct taped it on your face to the comfort. That's how, God bless America, you're competitive, you build a better mousetrap and make $1 million. The masks, machines are getting better and better. Maybe even for singers with heated humidity. Who knows?
All right, let's go next to Bill in Letts. Hello, Bill.
Yes, I have severe sleep apnea. CPAPs have not worked. Wanting to know the relatively new electrical stimulant, does it work for severe sleep apnea?
Well, and we were talking about that. So Dr. Van Dale at the University of Iowa in the Department of Otolaryngology is our surgeon that actually will place this. And we have two patients pending to be done upcoming months. And there are some specific standards in regard to body mass index, weight,
right,
and severity. But we think initially they're going to be sticklers with that, you know, following all the rules under which the research was studied. But we do think
right,
they're going to be a little bit more lax on the severity, because the oral device actually is for mild to moderate sleep apnea. But we know that the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, we know Medicaid, Medicare, Blue Cross Blue Shield, if you cannot tolerate CPAP or it's not working, the oral device, even in severe cases, is a next alternative, as the hypoglossal nerve stimulator might be. Now, one of the things you might want to consider, people can get such severe apnea that the combination, it's a little outside the box, of the oral device, it will often reduce significantly, but not get rid of all the apnea, then plus the PAP therapy, the CPAP,
oh, wow,
the bilevel PAP, may reduce the pressure you have to tolerate. And that combination has worked for us on occasion. But The future is bright. The combination of positional, CPAP, bilevel PAP, adaptive servoventilation, average volume assured ventilatory, hypoglossal nerve stimulation, jaw-retaining devices. Sit down with your sleep expert and look at the alternatives and the combination therapies that might be available to you, because no one wants you having, as my mom said, low oxygen at night. It's not good for you. It's not good for your family or the insurance companies.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Bill. Let's do a few email questions here, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Sherry asks, how harmful are the ibuprofen sleep aids that have Benadryl added?
Well, you know, it's interesting. A world-famous buddy of mine, a sleep disorder expert, Mark Mahalwald, had mentioned many years ago when he did a site visit in our lab, he goes, he was a big smoker back then, but he said, Benadryl doesn't do anything for sleep. But if something works for you, it may work for you. You know, you condition positively to it. And if it's not causing you any harm, but Benadryl, who hasn't heard of somebody using Benadryl for sleep? In fact, before I came on today, I talked to a sleep expert friend of mine. And I said, what do you use for a jet lag when you're traveling? What the president might know. He goes, I use Benadryl. I went, but, you know, that's supposed to be, you know, as you said, with ibuprofen, we're supposed to not recommend that. But if you've got arthritis, which I got, you know, ibuprofen, I use it frequently anyway because of arthritis, but I watch my gut because I've had ulcer. So you can overdo the ibuprofen. You have to watch your stomach. You need to, again, watch your kidneys, Benadryl. If it's working for you, and no, it is a sedative, it can have a hangover effect. So if it's first doing no harm and it's working for you, you know, it's maybe not what I would prescribe or recommended, but, you know, those are some of the side effects that you might have from it. So people have used a variety of things, and who hasn't heard of somebody using Benadryl with or without ibuprofen for sleep?
But if you were using it on a really regular basis.
Oh, yeah, I would be careful. So I used to be, before they replaced my hips, a marathon runner, and I overdid the ibuprofen. That can be dangerous.
All right. Here's an email from Paul. He says, I've worked overnights, 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. for 3 years now, and I often have trouble falling asleep and staying asleep. I take melatonin only if I haven't slept well for a few nights and need to catch up on sleep. Do you have any advice specifically for us night shift folks on how to fall asleep faster and stay asleep during the daytime?
Well, yeah, you know, and melatonin is one of them. And then I like what you do. You use it as you need it. One of the problems, though, is you are fighting Mother Nature. There's a reason we're wired to being wide awake during the day as hunters, as gatherers. It's easier to pick tomatoes, to shoot bears, and not be eaten by those bears or step all over those tomatoes when it's bright light. So we have adapted to being daytime animals, and when it gets dark, the melatonin goes up and go to sleep. I work shift. I do sleep. They call me at night. So I'm fighting Mother Nature. So what we like to do is, when you get home, blot out all the lights. In my room, I have the blot out shades. No light can get in. Even a little light can make a difference. I unplug, and it's difficult to do, to unplug your doorbell. But I live out in the country. No one ever comes. But the phone is off. I can't have someone interrupting my sleep because it's a fragile sleep because I'm fighting Mother Nature. Judicious use of melatonin often is helpful on an as-needed basis. But again, try to keep the bedroom environment quiet. The cognitive behavioral therapeutic interventions that we talked about beginning, dark, comfortable, conditioned positively, and then progressive relaxation therapy and judicious use of what you're using.
Let's go back to the phones. Lois is on the line in Marion. Hi, Lois.
Hi. Yes, I have a question. I don't have a problem falling asleep for like 3-4 hours, but inevitably I wake up. I'm not real tired, but little aches and pains seem to magnify. And I found a supplement called curcumin, and that seems to help. It has some melatonin in it, but I'm wondering how safe that really is.
Yeah, me too. I don't know what it is. I mean, so I have to let you know, I don't know. It's interesting. We were talking about this. Had a buddy, and he actually called in, was a patient, became a buddy. But he said, he's a truck driver. And, you know, when you're driving, you don't want to be sleepy on the road. And because of all the research that has gone on with truck drivers, we have the safest truck drivers in the world, the United States, according to Dr. Dinges and a lot of people, Pennsylvania Sleep Labs, who follow safety on the road. But he said, you know, when I get tired, what I often use is I put shredded wheat in my mouth, one of those little bite-sized ones. And I keep it in my mouth till it dissolves, and it just keeps me going during the day. Otherwise, I follow good sleep hygiene practices with cognitive behavioral therapeutic intervention, and I try not to nap during the day, which is also a controversial thing. But people often find what works for them. And if it works for them, it may not necessarily make sense to me or you or friends or family. But a lullaby to me is the Rolling Stones' Exile on Main Street. My wife cannot stand it, so she wants to hear Frank Sinatra as music in the room. So we don't have music in the room. We have a little fan going on in the room because we neither could get to sleep. But could it be harmful? Yeah, we would kill each other if I had to listen to Frank. Although Frank Sinatra's pretty good, make sure what you're taking is safe. So if it's first doing no harm, the general adage of medicine, find out what's in that thing. Don't take too much of it. And if you can avoid it, don't take it every night. Take it as you need it. You know, and then it gives you a psychological advantage over Mother Nature when she's giving you insomnia.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Lois. And let's go now to Jim in Solon. Hi, Jim.
Hey. Hi. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I just earlier in the program, the doctor mentioned the pressure this puts on your lungs over a period of time, and I'm just wondering. I had this prescribed my face mask about 8 years ago. Well, I gave up on it twice. I tried every mask in the world. I had those nose abrasions and still do, and I can't breathe strictly through my nose because I'd like to do that with this. As this woman mentioned, that sounds wonderful, but I have an asthmatic type thing where I have a problem. Just I have to breathe through my mouth somewhat.
Yeah.
So I use a total face mask. But what is the pressure thing again, doctor, that you mentioned that over a period of time it does it expand your lungs or what does it do?
Oh, probably didn't really do diddly stink. I may have had a misstep or there and misspoke something. Generally, it's not doing much in that regard. It's opening up. The pressures in this machine are relatively small pressures, but they're large enough to open up the floppy tissues in the back of your throat and even at the level of your vocal cords. It doesn't take much to open up your vocal cords, so it's useful in a variety of different kind of apneas people can get. But we do have machines for hypoventilation. And maybe that's, I think, what you're alluding to. And they're called average volume assured ventilatory support for people who have hypoventilation. We use this on the children, and we're getting a lot of them growing up with muscular dystrophies, Duchenne muscular dystrophies, with adults with amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, Lou Gehrig's disease, where they need something to blow up the lungs, if you will, but to a safe degree. It increases tidal volume. So what those machines, they're a special kind of CPAP machine, a positive airway pressure machine that will deliver a certain volume of air to sort of stent, if you will, your lungs, et cetera. So there are different kind of PAP machines that we do use in that regard. We use a different one, and we don't really have time to go into that, in people with central sleep apnea and heart failure, where the machine can even act as a mini ventilator in case you stop breathing completely.
All right. Well, Jim, thanks a lot for your call. Let's slip in at least one more here. Here's Dave in Des Moines. Hi, Dave.
Hi there. I'm calling from Des Moines. I've got sleep apnea, and I put my mask on. I've got the nose one, and I fall asleep in probably 5 minutes. It works great, and I get eight or nine hours of sleep. But the problem is my wife only gets maybe 3 or 4 hours of sleep a night. She might sleep for a couple hours, wake up, and then it takes her another 6 hours to fall asleep again. She's been to the sleep center here in Des Moines, but they can't seem to do anything. We've got room darkening shades. She plays a little quiet music, but she's not having any luck at all.
Is she falling asleep during the day while driving? Is she tired all the time?
No. She gets up at 9 o'clock in the morning. She says she's been laying in bed for 3 hours. She can't get back to sleep.
You know, she may be at the feet of the bell-shaped curve. Some of us can get by on less than 5 hours of sleep. That's called short sleepers, officially. Some of us with what we call idiopathic hypersomnia need more than 10 to 12 hours. That's devastating. So there's a broad range of normal, if you will. And I've seen that before where people have roommates and they go, I just got to get something to sleep. I said, well, how much are you sleeping a night? Well, maybe 5 hours. And what are you doing during the day? Are you sleepy, falling asleep, can't think? No, I'm just fine, but I need to sleep longer because my bed partner is sound asleep, and I keep waking them up.
We sleep in separate beds, and she's about 120 pounds, 5 foot five. So
yeah,
I know she doesn't have sleep apnea.
Yeah, my thought would be if she only needs, she may be at the feet of the bell-shaped curve. If there's no daytime component. Most sleep disorders, there has to be a problem during the day. Usually evidence is excessive sleepiness or some form of that where you can't think, concentrate, fall asleep while driving the car. And if she feels fine, I'd have her not lay in bed that long. Have her get up at a routine bedtime every single day. And if she needs to go to bed earlier, that's called sleep restriction, she will.
All right, Dave, thanks a lot for your call. Dr. Eric Dyken, thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having us.
Dr. Eric Dyken, a neurologist with the University of Iowa Sleep Disorders Center, drops by from time to time to give us some advice on sleeping better.
Good luck, Ben.
This has been River to River from Iowa Public Radio.